What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Fitness Lit Breakdown. Thank you all again for joining. Over the next half hour or so, we're going to dive into some topics today regarding maximal strength and explosive strength. And another way to kind of think about explosive strength, it's just kind of maybe a fancy word used for power. And power training might be a little bit different than what you have envisioned in your brain. So I'll kind of break that down here in a second. But this is focused specifically on the kettlebell swing. So hopefully a few episodes ago, you guys tuned in when I brought on Sergeant Major Kettlebell, his IG name, Stephen Burkett, the world record holder in the kettlebell swings. So it got me kind of thinking a little further on this topic, and I came across a paper that really has a lot of influence in how we should be thinking about our own personal training, especially as we start to age. And I'm talking about after like 25 years old. So because essentially what happens to our nervous system after what's kind of seen as that physiological middle age of around 25 years old, and that we really have to be super invested in maintaining and still improving our ability to produce power. And our nervous system is very efficient in that if we don't specifically train this way and engage muscles in this fashion, if you don't use it, you lose it, right? And what will tend to happen is that muscle fibers that have the capacity to be recruited really quickly and produce a lot of force, aka power, those muscle fibers will be killed off by the nervous system because they require a lot of energy to maintain. And if you're not going to use them, your nervous system's like, hey, like, you know, I'm not going to expend a ton of energy to maintain these bad boys, so let's just get rid of them. And what happens is they cut off the nerve supply to those muscles and the muscle dies, right? And what happens after that muscle dies, you're not getting it back. So those fibers need to be really, you know, sought after and maintained, especially as we age, because that's what we're talking about, you know, maintaining balance, maintaining our ability to catch ourselves if we do slip and fall, all those nasty things that you'll hear about with people as we age and getting injured and leading to really negative outcomes. So keep that in mind as you're training. It doesn't matter how old you are, we can improve this capacity to generate power, even if our nervous system has killed off a majority of those muscle fibers, right? They're called the type 2X. But you can still improve other muscle fibers' ability to be recruited quickly and to produce force. So that's a good thing. But if we can keep them as we're young and maintain them through the lifespan, even better. Okay. So real quick, when you think about power, most of the time when, you know, almost by default, we kind of think about power lifting, right? And power lifting has nothing to do with power, believe it or not. Power lifting is really based on strength. Because it's all about how much weight can you lift one time, right? And it's done in the three movements of the bench press, the squat, and the deadlift. And if you look at those movements, yes, you're moving a lot of resistance, right? A lot of weight is being lifted one time, but the speed at which it's being lifted is super slow. And that's just the nature of trying to produce a lot of force. It takes a lot of time to be able for your nervous system to say, hey, I need this much muscle to be recruited to keep lifting this much resistance. And to keep going up the scale, it has to keep recruiting more and more and larger muscle fibers to do so. And that takes time, right? It's not an instantaneous thing where we just automatically produce as much total force as possible. So therefore, it takes time to do so, right? And then we're just working against physics at that point. So there's a lot going on. But when you think about power, power can be seen in almost any movement at any point in time because power is just a simple formula of force times distance divided by time. So how much weight are you lifting? How far are you lifting it? And how long did it take you to do so, right? So you can essentially turn any exercise into a power exercise if you think about it that way. Now don't get tricked because when you look at just the pure numbers of it, most of the time humans produce the most amount of power when they're moving something that's maybe 30 to 40% of what they can lift one time or that one rep max, right? And so I got a kind of an example here for you just to think about it, because as we know, if the resistance increases, it tends to take us longer to lift it or move it, right? But there is a trade-off, because if the resistance is so light, yes, you can move it very rapidly, but the math just won't work out to where you're producing a lot of force. So here's a quick example. Let's say I want to move 50 pounds 3 feet, and this could be whatever you want to think about. It could be a squat or whatever movement that you want to do that's moving the resistance 3 feet, okay? And I can do that in half of a second, So I would take 50 pounds times 3 feet, divide that by 0.5 seconds, and I would have an answer of 30 pound feet per second, right? Now let's say I want to try and do that same exercise, but do 75 pounds. I want to move it 3 feet, but now it takes me 0.8 seconds to do so, right? I'm lifting 25 more pounds, but I only produced 281 pound feet per second, right? Or 19 pound feet per second less than what I could do using 50 pounds, right? So the math will work out where essentially that 30 to 40%, this isn't everybody, but the majority of people will produce the most amount of power they can produce at that 30 to 40% of what you can do one time. Some people might be 60% of what they can do one time. Some people might be 20%, but the majority are going to hover around that 30 to 40%. Okay, so that's a good way to think of power. You can do power training in dumbbell shoulder presses or squats or whatever you want to do, right? If you're focusing on how fast can I press or stand up or whatever that might be to produce as much power during that set as possible. So good, you might want to start, if you haven't, start to slowly implement some of those exercises into your training to see if that changes things for you. And I've got a good idea it might. So when you think about kettlebell training in specific, to this paper, they've kind of listed how most of them are more ballistic in nature. And, you know, most ballistic exercises have kind of a lengthening or a stretch phase, a kind of a middle phase. A fancy term for the middle phase is amortization. It's kind of right between the lengthening and then followed by the shortening phase, right? So if you think about like a maximal jump, you go down into that counter movement where you're lengthening the muscles that you're about to use. You're trying to spend as little bit of time as you can at the bottom and then rapidly come out of it, right? The shortening phase to length to explode up and jump as high as you can, right? So most of the what's been seen in the literature and using kettlebell exercises are more ballistic in nature, like your swing or your snatch or your press, whatever those might be, are very ballistic. And when you look at the swing in general, it really involves the entire body, right? Even though it's a majority hip hinge exercise, where you're really focusing on hinging at the hips and keeping vertical shins and sitting back into your glutes and feeling the stretch in your hamstrings, exhaling and exploding upward and using your hips to push the kettlebell upward, and really your arms are just holding and guiding it like a pendulum, right? Your arms aren't really doing much besides just holding on for dear life so the kettlebell doesn't go out and hit something or someone. But this study really focuses on that swing because it can do so many good things for us, and even cited in some research to promote and improve things like muscular strength, right? Improving your ability to do higher amounts of work, right? Or one rep max, if you think about strength as a good way to define it, right? Your one rep max. It's been shown to improve endurance, and endurance can be looked at as performing, you know, a specific intensity before you start to fatigue, right? That length of time is your endurance before you fatigue and can't do it with correct technique. Also been shown to improve power, right? Not surprising because it's very similar. You're trying to move the kettlebell as quickly as you can upward during that movement. So force times distance divided by time. You're trying to decrease the amount of time, therefore increasing power. And it's also been shown to improve cardiovascular fitness. And your cardiovascular fitness is a good way to think about that is your VO2 max. How much volume of oxygen can you bring in a specific time period? And the more you can do, the more work you can do aerobically, right? And if you think about a kettlebell swing, depending on your technique, you might be really elevating heart rate, increasing the amount of oxygen you're bringing in, therefore improving the cardiovascular system, right? So pretty cool stuff. With just that one movement, you can really improve lots of these things. Now, along with that, there hasn't been a ton of research specific to the kettlebell swing compared to more basic exercises that have been done in done a lot in our training. Things like the max vertical jump, right? We know that if you train max vertical jump and you do that body weight or certain percentages of what you can do, you know, one time, you're going to improve your essentially your lower body power, okay? But what about the swing? Because the swing would be less ballistic in nature compared to a max vertical jump, probably less demanding on the skeletal system and the muscle and tendons because you're not having to land so many times from a height, right? That takes a pretty big demand on our physiology to recover from. So really cool when we start thinking about the swing. So the study I'm citing here had a few things they wanted to try and find was that, hey, number one, there's not a ton out there in kettlebell swing. What can I find on this study that is related to what I can improve lower body power-wise and strength, right? And we're going to do so with comparing to, like I mentioned before, that max vertical jump. So they had 6 weeks of training, and there were 24 healthy men, college-aged, 18 to 27 years old was the age range there. And they were involved in what says regular university-level sport, soccer, hockey, and rugby. So I'm not sure if this is kind of Division I. It doesn't really say where it's from. Oh, there it is. It does. It's in the UK. So somewhere in England. So I'm not sure if it's like a varsity sport or a club sport, what that might look like. Probably more club-based, but who knows. So 24 gentlemen, they trained for 6 weeks, and they were divided into two groups, okay? And the two groups were either a kettlebell swing training group or a jump squat training group. So the jump squat would be essentially what you were thinking about. I think they used a barbell as well, kind of a back squat, barbell jump squat. I'd have to kind of go back and look, but I think it was, yeah, the barbell. And they compared these two groups. Okay, so I'll give you the breakdown of the training program. Remember, 6 weeks, each of those two groups trained for two times per week over those 6 weeks. The kettlebell group, if you were greater than 70 kilograms, which is around 154 pounds, I think, if you weighed more than that, you were given a 35-pound kettlebell. And you did 12 rounds of 30 seconds of swings, work-wise, 30 seconds off for 12 times. Now, you're probably guessing how many swings, and they didn't give me any numbers of how many swings average over those 30 seconds, but you're probably looking at like 18 or 20 swings, I would say, depending on how good your technique is and how well acquainted you are at doing this exercise. That's probably a decent number that they probably did over those 30 seconds, then took a 30-second break, and then did that 12 times, okay? So that's only, 12 minutes of actual total workout time, which is, that's pretty good efficient-wise. You know, I'm thinking like you got a couple kids running around and you're trying to squeeze in a quick workout. 12 minutes sounds pretty good to me. If you were less than 70 kilogram person, so if you weighed less than 154 pounds, you were given a 26-pound kettlebell, and that's what you used for those 6 weeks of training, okay? Now, right away, if you've ever done kettlebell swings, you're probably thinking that's a little light, right? In terms of how much load you're trying to swing. I found just personal training, like myself, just with my swings, maybe something closer to like a third of your body weight. Once you get pretty oriented with a kettlebell swing and have a pretty good lower body strength and power ability, probably a third of your body weight is more substantial to really start to improve things like strength and power. So me personally, I'm looking at this, maybe it's a little light, but I think they used it mainly to have technique be on point and really emphasize popping up out of that swing as quickly as possible to generate power. So that's just my thought on that. If you were selected to that group, you did that, right? If you were selected to the jump squat training group, you had, let's see, I'm trying to break this down here a little bit. They trained at varying resistances of their one rep max for the jump squat. So you did different reps at zero, at body weight, at 20% of your one rep max, at 40% of your one rep max, and 60% of your one rep max. So like I mentioned before, trying to get that whole array of where your max power might be from person to person. And I think they even said, they broke it down here, where there were four subjects of where basically body weight, they produced the most power. There were four subjects where 20% they produced the most power. There was one subject at 40% where they produced the most power, and three subjects where at 60% of their one rep max during that jump squat produced their most power. So you can see there's a large range there. Like I mentioned before, 30 to 40% is likely the average, but it's definitely not, you know, pinpointed on that 30 to 40%. So that's kind of cool they included that. Now, and they did that again two times per week for 6 weeks. Okay, and I think that took that training session for the jump squat group took longer than 12 minutes. And they even mentioned somewhere in there, I'm kind of jumping ahead here a little bit. They said they didn't try and normalize or make equal the overall training volume. And if you've looked at or listened to any of my previous podcasts, you kind of know that volume is essentially king when it comes to predicting your improvement capacity based on your training program, because the more volume you do, most of the time is going to tell you what's going to happen, right, in terms of your improvements. Not 100% always, because we can't just, you know, if you're thinking like bench press, you're trying to improve your bench press. If you did 2 pounds and, you know, 500 reps, even though it may have been the same volume if you did more weight, less reps, I have a hard time saying that 2 pound bench press is going to improve overall maximal strength, right? Because there's some specificity involved. But most of the time, volume is going to kind of dictate our results. So let's dive into our results with that in mind. Now, if we look at maximal strength, because if you remember the title, we were trying to see if the kettlebell swing could improve maximal strength, and the other term they used was explosive strength, aka power. Okay. Now, maximal strength between the two groups, there was no difference between their improvement in maximal strength statistically. Okay, so if you run the statistics on that, and I'm not going to dive into the details there, but the improvement they both saw, there was no difference between the two. However, when you look at the actual number, the men in the kettlebell group improved their maximal strength, and they did maximal strength. They think they did a one rep max half squat is what they say with a barbell. So they did that before they started the whole 6 week training program, and they did it after the 6 week training program, one rep max again on the half squat and see what happened, right? So they looked at maximal strength. That's that one rep max half. One rep max half squat. The kettlebell group improved that maximal strength by 12%, while the jump squat group improved the maximal strength by 7.7%. So even though that's not seen as statistically different, the kettlebell group was able to improve their maximal strength by almost twice the amount. Okay, so there is some nuance there. You have to dive into some of the numbers if you're really trying to figure out if you're improving strength more or not. The pure statistics, you have to kind of dive in a little bit further sometimes. Now, the explosive strength, they tested at the beginning of the 6 weeks, and they did a vertical jump, max vertical jump height. And then after the 6 weeks, they all did a max vertical jump height. And the improvement between the kettlebell group and the jump squat group was seen as not different, right? They both improved statistically in the eyes of statistics the same. But the kettlebell group improved by 15%, while the jump squat group improved by 24%. So quite a bit of a difference in improvement on the jump squat group. And likely that's just attributed purely to the specificity of the training program of 6 weeks, right? They did a jump squat for 6 weeks. So likely your max vertical jump would increase, right? That's just purely specificity of training. You can expect those results to happen. And I believe the authors even alluded to that as well in their discussion. So, but overall, if you look at just the two, we wanted to see if maximal strength was improved and explosive strength was improved. Yes, it was improved statistically from beginning of 6 weeks to after 6 weeks. Either way, whether you did the kettlebell swing or that jump squat exercise. Okay, so pretty neat findings there. And maximal, you can kind of take that and look at it however you want to. But I look at the swing in the essence of you can almost take anyone and teach them to be proficient and to do the kettlebell swing, right? And it's such a compact movement that I feel it transfers very readily from the exercise setting to the real world setting, and doing almost any movement you do. You have to be very comfortable and confident and capable of that hip hinge exercise while producing some kind of force, depending on the rate of what you're developing it, right? The speed or the power. Now, likely with the jump squat, I'm likely not going to program for everyone to put a barbell on their back, go into a kind of a drop down into a squat, and then jump from there, right? Because we have to think about the landing impacts on the hips and the spine and the knees and all that kind of stuff. And if you're very efficient, likely that's an okay training paradigm, but we're likely not going to do that for a long period of time because the demand on our physiology is much greater to recover from that, right? Now, maybe if you're doing just body weight, I think that's likely something that can be done for most people. If we're just trying to do like a jump squat just with body weight, that kind of teaches us biomechanics and producing a lot of force quickly, aka power, while the demand on landing is much less than if we're trying to land with like a barbell on our backs, right? So that might be a little bit more doable for most people. But I still think the kettlebell swing is likely the most easily taught and repeatable to where you can do it up to multiple times per week in your training and see very similar, if not better results than if you're doing a jump squat with a barbell on your back, right? That's pretty cool. I think that's awesome. Now, I believe they hinted at a couple of things here that something else to consider was the time element of that, where these younger gentlemen who are already fit to begin with saw those great improvements in both strength and power just doing the swing, of only devoting 12 minutes twice per week at doing that, right? I thought that being super efficient with your time is another amazing thing of the swing. And I believe both groups just did only that training program that they were assigned to and the practice and whatever else happened for their teams, okay? So everything else being equal, whether they jump squatted or kettlebell swing, the kettlebell swing group only did 12 minutes two times per week. So I'm just thinking like, you know, time efficiency in working those workouts in that are just purely kettlebell swings. That's all they did, right? And still saw those amazing improvements. So I thought that was pretty cool too. Something to keep in mind to think about how you can include that into your training program. Now, one thing I will caution you on with the kettlebell swing is just take your time and improve on your technique before you even start to think about or worry about how much weight you're swinging, right? I mentioned like I found personally about a third of my body weight is where I'm probably developing the most force, and I really feel like I'm snapping a higher resistance up without having to sacrifice the speed. But, you know, if you've never swung before, that's likely going to be a lot of resistance, right? And really focus on using that hip drive as you pop up to move the kettlebell upward, right? The arms really have no play more than you just using your hands to grip the kettlebell, and think of it as just like a pendulum, right? Your arms are purely the hands of the pendulum. The hips create the force to move the kettlebell upward, and then you're essentially letting the kettlebell fall straight back down. You're trying to get your hips out of the way as you hinge back into that movement, right? Lots of different technique on this. I think the most widely, I don't want to say accepted, but known version of the kettlebell swing is where your chest drops pretty far, almost down into a full deadlift position. Now, if you're doing it that way, you're just doing more overall work and likely focusing maybe a little bit more on increasing heart rate and improving aerobic capacity, right? Just because you're doing more overall work in the same maybe given period of time. If you did listen to the podcast a few episodes ago where I did have Steve Burkett in, he has really capitalized and worked on creating his own type of swing. Now, to the naked eye, it's not going to look any different to what I really just explained to you, except that he really focuses on keeping much more of an upright chest, not having to displace your torso down as far, right? Because he's more worried about being super efficient and being able to do more swings over a given period of time. And the more you essentially lower your chest and rise it back up, the more energy you're using. Therefore, your endurance is likely not going to be as great. So he is much more focused on sitting back in the hips, keeping shoulders and chest up, really focusing on vertical shins and exploding upward, right? He's got some really cool things on his page if you want to check it out that I think would help with your technique as well. But lots of different things out there when it comes to the swing. So I would just go back and say, hey, practice it. One of the best ways to start just getting that movement down is what I call kind of a broomstick RDL, where you kind of take a broomstick or a piece of PVC pipe or whatever it might be. You hold it, you take your arms around your back, hold it, kind of making it an external spine for yourself. And you're trying to keep that broomstick or piece of PVC or whatever you're using in contact with your head, your middle of your back, and your tailbone. And if you can keep that pole in contact with those three points as you go down into that hip hinge or kettlebell swing motion, you're really focusing on keeping that neutral spine, right? Keeping that nice hip hinge movement, focusing on getting most of your range through your hips and the mobility of your hamstrings, then exploding up from there. That's just a great way to practice the movement without using any resistance while programming your body and your nervous system what this movement should feel like, okay? So I've got this exercise on my YouTube channel. If you want to check it out, just type in Nick Truby YouTube. And you have to do a little bit of searching through the videos. I got a ton of videos on there, but I do have that broomstick RDL exercise on there. That's very helpful to see and do. So just start out, focus on technique, build up with smaller resistances as you work into greater and greater resistances. And I think you'll have much more success doing it that way compared to just jumping right in and just swinging who knows what. Okay. So hopefully this was helpful. In that if you are trying to do some kettlebell swings or getting them involved into your program, this gives you an idea of what you can expect with 12 minutes of work. And I will say, I kind of left out before, they did a lot of They were under the supervision of very kettlebell trained people and resistance trained strength coaches. And I think they had 6 or 8 familiarization sessions where they came in and purely focused on technique under the watchful eye of someone who knew what they were doing before they even started collecting any data. So a lot of time was spent in technique on this study in general, just to get to the point where they could start collecting data. So thank you all for joining. I'd really appreciate if you're getting or listening to this anywhere where you're able to leave a comment or a review or whatever that might look like. Just a few minutes of your time, I'd super appreciate it. Any kind of comments or suggestions or material you'd like me to find for the next episode, it's always helpful. Believe it or not, I've had probably the last 10 episodes, 4 or 5 of those have been just from people reaching out to me and asking, hey, what does this look like? And I found some results for them to kind of make an episode for. So pop that in there on that platform if you can. I would love it. If you can't, look me up on Instagram, dr.nicktruby. And shoot me a message about, hey, what, you know, I'm interested in this. Can you find something for an episode, for a future episode? I'd love to find that for you too and have a cool chat about it. So thanks y'all again for the time you spent with me, and look forward to seeing you next time at next week's episode.